The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Max Radio. It's an open line today through till 1 o'clock. Tomorrow, Teresa Cope will be on, the Chief Executive Officer, the boss of ManxCare. But it's an open line today, so whatever you want to talk about, by all means, call, text, email and WhatsApp. Call 661368. Message and WhatsApp on 166177. Email studio at maxradio.com. Still getting some feedback regarding this proposed tourist levy for visitors to the Isle of Man. The idea is at an early stage and set to form part of an update to be presented to Tynwald next month. And the feedback seems to be, why are they doing this and what's the money going to go to? Of all the people that come to the Isle of Man, what's the money actually going to be spent on? And the consensus seems to be, if it's going to be spent by bureaucracy and civil servants, why do it? Shouldn't that be in the budget already? If they want more money, why don't they just ask Tynwald for it and go through the process? But anyway, more on that later on. Let's get to the lines first of all. David's with us. Hi, David.
Hi, Andy. You okay?
Good, yes. Thanks. Yeah, you're loud and clear.
Bang on. I don't want number two anymore. I'm just number one. Can I just say, we've scored two goals now in government, haven't we? The public has. One is the post office roof, PV panels on.
Yep.
Now we've got the NSC roof, going into planning and putting panels on the roof. But where are the other applications coming forward from other government departments or central government itself for their green initiatives for the future? You know? Helping us out. And by the way, my battery's full.
Oh, really?
It is full, yeah.
So how much are you generating at the moment?
Oh, I knew you probably asked that question. I think I'm doing 2 kilowatts, which is pretty good. And I'd love people to come on, because when I bump into people, they say to me, how's your panels doing? Great, this, that, and the other. What are the costs? I'd love people to come on and say how successful they were, or if anybody's had a downer, do you know what I mean? There may be some of this, maybe had a downer.
Well,
the thing is that the
solar panels aren't free, and all the circuitry and everything that goes with it. I mean, this costs, you know, how much? 20,000, something like that?
Not for me. No, it was less than that. I'll probably have to tell you in an envelope. And what I was thinking of doing too, as a little competition we can have until the Tynwald, we replace the president of Tynwald, why can't we just send you sealed applications in to you, Andy Wint, care of the Man in Line, and who our predictions should be for the new president of Tynwald?
Oh, we'll run a sweepstake.
Yeah. I'll get mine sent off tomorrow for you. There's no problem on that. We could do it for a charity.
Yeah, well, and the winner gets a Man in Line tea towel.
Well, yes, I was promised a tea towel ages ago and never got it.
Oh, right, okay. Well, I'll see if we can find you one.
I've had a jug, and what else did I have? A water bottle and something like that, and it's got something purple. But no. But I'd like to hear from people there. Now, the sun is out. It's still out now. It's not the sun you need. It's just the light, bright light. And like your own, and you've got to give it to Manx Radio too, putting panels on your roof. But you haven't got a battery, have you? That's your problem.
Good grief. I don't know about that. I'll have to ask the people who know about it. But we've certainly got panels. Certainly got panels. All right.
Okay.
Good to hear from
Cheers,
you.
Boy.
Thanks for that. A planning application has been submitted for a proposed rooftop solar array on the National Sports Centre. It's got a big roof. And Max Utilities want to put 1,200 panels installed across the site. They reckon that would generate 735 kilowatts. Blimey. The planning statement says the rooftop installation is going to have an extremely low visual impact while supporting government's commitments to reducing emissions. They don't actually say how much it's going to cost. The Manx Utilities says the submission of the application follows detailed structural and technical assessments of the NSC roof to ensure installation meets safety, design and performance requirements. It's not going to fall off and it will work. Electrical cabling will connect directly into Manx Utilities' own substation located inside the NSC in the southeast corner of the building. The MUA says it supports commitments outlined by the Manx Utilities chair in Tynwald and contributes to the island plan objective in increasing local renewable energy generation. The application, supported by the required drawings, plans and etc., certificate of lawful development, all the bits and pieces and the jots and tittles, the proposed installation will be located on the roof. The application, by the way, can be found on the planning register. Take a look at 25 /01128/LAW. The project forms part of Manx Utilities' wider programmes to support the transition to cleaner energy. You just wonder, how much are they going to pay? Will they pay the NSC? Bearing in mind, the NSC is Department of Education, Sport and Culture. So will the NSC get the money or will DESC get the money? Even if they 9p per kilowatt, when they want it, of course. It will be interesting to find out. And also, how much it's going to cost to do this. Solar panels are fantastic. They work. Photovoltaic cells have been around for years and years and years. It prompted me to notice that when the Artemis went up and they were talking about it's 50 years since man was last on the moon. Of course, all those space shuttle, their space craft, used to use solar panels then, didn't they? They had solar arrays. So what was once science fiction became science fact and now is in our life. Solar panels are everywhere. And everybody's now buying those garden lights that rely on solar panels and last for a few hours at night. So, well, we'll take up David's quest there. If you're generating at the moment, if you've got a solar panels, if you've got a solar array, how much are you generating then? He's doing 2 kilowatts and his batteries are full. What about yourself? How long have you had a solar array and how much are you generating? How much of a difference does it actually make? It takes ages to recoup the cost because it can cost thousands and thousands and thousands to do this. You know, by the time you've saved the electricity, I'm sure you'll work it out for yourself. What has been said in the past is having solar panels on your roof can make your property more saleable and more valuable. So there is that. You will save on the electricity that you're not paying for, i.e. your solar panels are running stuff around the house. You will, when MU want to buy the electricity off you for 9p a time, they'll sell you it at 29, but buy it off you at 9. So there's a comparison to be made. Sit down with a piece of paper and a pencil and work it out. I just wonder, and who's generating the most electricity on the Isle of Man today? Here's Howard with us today. Hi, Howard.
Hey, Randy. It's just a question I was asking Chris, but he was unsure. It must be the most recognisable piece of music on the Isle of Man. That's the signature tune to the Manning Line.
Well,
where did it come from?
Where does it come from? Oh, crikey, I do know the... I do actually know what it's called. I'll try and find out.
Mm.
It's... we got it... It started off with David Collister, when David used to do Man in Line.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure David must have found it. And it is actually used all over the world. Somebody emailed in from Australia to say it's used on a sports programme in Australia. It's used a lot closer to home. Laxey School use it for their prize giving on a Friday, every prize giving. The children walk down to the Man in Line theme. Lots of people have commented on this. And as you say, well, it's been around with us now for well over 30 plus years when you think that David started, when David took over Man in Line after, I'm trying to remember who did it before David. It would have been,
I can't remember now.
It was Andy Mack. Andy Mack did it for a while.
Andy Mack, yeah.
Dave Eager did it for a while. And obviously there was... Alan Jackson, Jacko did it. Well, Jacko started. It's 50. It's over 50 years old, Man in Line, Howard.
Good Lord, and we're still banging our head against the wall.
That's true, isn't it? We call it, it's therapy, isn't it?
Trade allure.
Yes. Okay. Right.
No, it's just I was coming from the south, and I heard it, and I thought, now, where did that come from? Because it, as soon as the first couple of chords, you know exactly what you're going to be listening to.
Yes, lots of people say that.
Anyway, it's just us. I'm stopped here waiting to go home now, and I thought I'd give a quick ring up and see what it was. But, yeah, one day we might find out.
All right. Okay. All right. Thanks, Howard.
Okay.
Cheers now.
Take care. Bye now.
Good to hear from you. Here's a message in from Max, who said you can find out very easily if you've got a smartphone and you've got an app called Shazam on it. All you need to do is hit the Shazam button when it's on, and it'll tell you all about it. I'll tell you more about that. And, of course, we've got some funky versions of it, some jazzed-up versions of the theme as well. All sorts of versions of it, but we play the normal one for Man in Line. Somebody phoned in the other day asking about Manx Care and the latest confirmed position about how much they're operating on. This is just ahead of Thursday, because, of course, Theresa Cope is on Thursday. Theresa Cope, chief exec of Manx Care, will be on Thursday, tomorrow the 9th. The latest confirmed position is that Manx Care is operating under a significantly increased budget and a formal financial recovery plan, while also moving to introduce some private healthcare services on the island. According to the Alamein government's 26-27 operating plan, Manx Care has a budget of just over £400 million and is entering the first full year of a multi-year financial recovery programme alongside targets to reduce waiting lists and shift more care in the community through the Home First model. On private healthcare specifically, services remain limited at present but are in the process of being expanded. The private health wing, the private ward, it's not really a private ward, it's just an extra bit on Nobles at the moment, but that's in the process of being expanded. Manx Care and the Department of Health and Social Care have confirmed that the private patients unit at Nobles Hospital is being prepared to reopen with a focus initially on day case and inpatient procedures such as cataracts, subject to governance and safety checks being completed by the end of this month. The current plans being delivered is to begin to deliver private procedures during the 2026-2027 financial year, which we're in now. Target of around 100 day case treatments by March 2027, and a longer term private patient strategy is being developed with external advisors. Importantly, ministers have stated that any expansion of private care mustn't disadvantage patients. The system is still primarily focused on reducing waiting times and stabilising public health care services. So there we are. That's the case there. Obviously, at the moment, a lot of people who have, and bearing in mind, a lot of people do have private health care, not necessarily choosing to pay for it out of their own pocket. They get it as part of a salary package from the many large companies that operate on the Isle of Man. And private operations are mainly carried out across the water. How many people do you know that have had to go to the Spire Hospital on the Wirral? And often to be operated on by a consultant from the Isle of Man. So you'll often get the case, the kind of ludicrous case of patients being flown to the Wirral, going to the Spire Hospital and being operated on by a consultant who's flown over and done the same journey. And then everybody packs up and comes back to the Isle of Man. How's that for a carbon footprint? What do you say? Here's Robert now. Hi, Robert.
Yeah, me and my vape stick. Thanks to the man over at Grower, he gave me some vape ball. How you doing?
Very good, thank you.
Yeah, it was just the thing on one of your websites about smartphone cutting back on and what have you. I can't remember what the tagline was now, but cutting back on smartphone use. And they said they had a thing over in California where they sued Google, Apple, Facebook, and everything but TikTok. I agree with that to a certain extent, but I put my phone two rooms away when I sleep, so it doesn't interfere with anything, you know, and I turn it off. But yeah, I think smartphone interference is key to any platform coming up in terms of the youth and things like that.
Well, how do you stop young people wanting to have a smartphone and to use it, though?
Well, you just say don't have it before 16.
Really? So under 16 shouldn't have a smartphone?
Well, it worked for Bill Gates.
Yeah, but isn't that, I mean, what about somebody who's 15 and a half, who may be a lot more adult than somebody who's 16 years of age? They'll probably think that's unfair.
Well, you have to explain the jealousy and greed element to it, don't you? I mean, there's jealousy, you've got, everyone else has got a phone,
yeah.
And there's greed that you want to have something on your phone to look at and... You know, probably vape too and all the rest of it. So
what about youngsters then who want to be able, if they go out, want to be able to contact their parents or people, you know, friends or family when they're out and about? What, do they have an old Motorola brick then, a Nokia brick?
I think you can pick up one that doesn't do Spotify. I mean, if it's just got the basic apps on it and it's just a phone, it's on page you go, then they can call it. I think those are available if you Google them. There's loads of them on YouTube. You can usually pick a few from Taiwan, you know.
And do you think youngsters under 16 would swallow all of this?
Well, I don't swallow. What do you mean? Why do you say swallow?
Would they go for it then? If people were saying to, would they swallow this idea? Would they say, that's a good idea, I'll give up my smartphone?
Well, I think you can put it down for 2 days and notice the difference. I think that's a key element, that maybe have a box in the room to put your phone in with a latch on it. To say, look, don't pass the latch, you know. If you want to have a go at your smartphone, let's have a chat about it and maybe just have a look on your parents' phone or something like that, you know.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Robert. Good to hear from you.
All right. No worries.
It's 22 minutes past 12. Francis is on now. Hi, Francis.
Hello. I'd just like to mention Roger Waterson.
Oh, good grief. I'd forgotten, yes, the late, great Roger Waterson.
He was great, you're right there. But I just thought that we had to mention him, because he did an awful lot of work for everybody. He got time for everybody, like yourself. He had time for everybody, and he would do a lot of research. And regarding the music, I'm sure Roger would have been able to tell you the answer to that question. Because that's how he was. He'd go deep in and find out what things needed.
And let's remember, former MHK for Middle.
Yes.
Roger was an MHK for Middle, and obviously a businessman around Douglas, as well as being a very, very good broadcaster. Yes, Sunday afternoons were sensational with Roger. Good.
Yes, and he had so many stories to tell, and he'd go, as I say, deep into anything that anyone was involved with. In my case, it was when my late husband Tom and I were doing the 5-year campaign to save the Wurlitzer organ, and he gave me a lot of airtime on that, which eventually we became very good friends with him and the family. But I would just feel that I want him to remember.
Well, and seeing as you mentioned the Wurlitzer, all right, give us a couple of minutes on the Wurlitzer, what the situation was and how it was all resolved, Francis.
Well, it was originally purchased from a doctor in the UK, and the late Jeff Corkish, and I can't think of the manager. I just can't think of his name. He did a lot of work, and they brought that organ over to the Isle of Man,
right,
with the intention of it going in the Gaiety. But then when they got the organ, they found that if they put it in the Gaiety, they would lose two or three of the front row seats. So then it was shoved, as the word shoved, I mean, Summerland, and it was stuck in Summerland, never used, and just had a cloth over it. I've got photographs of all this sort of thing. Because we were very keen on it. Me, personally, I loved Wurlitzers because, of course, I was born in Blackpool. I lived with Blackpool Tower Wurlitzer, so I knew there was a big future for it if it was in the right place. But to cut the story short, eventually it went into the arcade, and it's used intermittently, but that was a big project that we tried, and it could have gone into the Royal Hall in the villa, But at that time, the people involved in the government shut their heels in and said it wouldn't fit. But in actual fact, and I don't know if anybody else knows this, but under the stage in the Villa Marina ballroom, there is a space underneath there, and William Noble left money in his trust for an organ to go under there. But that was never talked about. But I've got all the documents going back to all when Blue Noble left money for that organ, for an organ, not an, well, it's for an organ. And their argument was, where would all the pipes go? But it could have fitted in there. But then that's history. And it's but that's why I was heavily involved with Roger, because he was very keen on that subject as well.
Mm. So yeah, I remember when, as you say, when the Wurlitzer was in, was sitting in the, well, it was sitting right at the back of Summerland, wasn't it?
It was on a little platform,
absolutely swallowed by the kind of huge space that it was in. But it was still operated at Summerland infrequently, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. But unfortunately, the fitting of it or the installation was, the pipes were in three separate rooms, quite a long way away from where the Wurlitzer organ itself was. So you got a feedback which didn't actually give the right sound for the organ.
Right, okay.
That's what the problem was there. And in actual fact, because the Summerland wasn't being used, the manager then, he gave Tom and I the keys to go and use that the building, the room, where the Wurlitzer was. And we had two afternoons for the public to come and see it, because they were going to take it out of Summerland, because they were talking then of doing something with Summerland. So we did that, and we had a couple of people playing it, and it was lovely to hear it. But as I say, it wasn't to be, but it's in the arcade now. We did save it, and that's as far as I feel about it. We did save it.
Okay, all
but
right.
It was changed from white to brown, which, well, it's always known as white, aren't they? But
yes.
But I'm quite happy. I just wanted Roger to be mentioned and my connection with him, and we were very good friends. And sadly, we lost them both.
Both Roger and Gwen. Yeah, shame.
Yes,
all right.
Yes.
Francis, we appreciate it, and thanks for putting Roger on the map today. I'm sure he would have appreciated it as well.
Thanks again. Thanks for all that you do as well.
All right. Good to hear from you. Thank you, Francis. Look at that. Time's 27 minutes past 12. The old Wurlitzer at the Villa Marina, and prior to that at Summerland. Castle Town Commissioner says it's a concern that the sale of the former police station is going before Tynwald at the end of this month. Castle Town Commissioner has agreed the building should be kept under the care of Manx National Heritage and turned into a museum. The Commissioner said the old police station building is part of Castle Town's heritage and want Tynwald not to approve the motion to sell the old police station. Now, if you live in Castle Town, I just wonder what your thoughts are with this. Is it better to keep it as a museum or to sell it? And obviously there's been ideas about what to do with the old police station in the past. Tony Brown, the chair of Castle Town Commissioners, told the board there's an opportunity to develop the property as a museum to the history of policing in the Isle of Man. And, of course, the station itself is an historic building. It was designed by Bailey Scott and built in the 19th century. It's been empty since 2017 and under the care of Manx National Heritage after the year after that. Obviously, the potential museum could include its link to the court, which used to be inside Castle Rusham. Manx National Heritage said the police station's an important part of the island's architectural story, and they're committed to ensuring that its next chapter is one of respect and renewal. They want to seek a responsible private owner aiming to secure a sustainable future for the building, one that preserves its heritage while enabling it to contribute positively to community life. Also on the agenda was a statement from Mr. Brown about the ongoing situation regarding the yacht Peggy. He said the local authority continues to be concerned that the boat remains in storage at Braddon rather than in Castletown. He told the board it's been 11 years since the Peggy was temporarily taken from Castletown, and it's unacceptable that the yacht hasn't been returned. He said the commissioners will support Manx National Heritage in their efforts to have it brought back to the town. And the local authority has applied for planning permission for a handrail adjacent to the Union Hotel in Market Square as well. So that's the situation in Castletown with the old police station and what's going to happen to it. What do you think?
EVF, fueling the island and fueling you. With a great range of fresh foods and everyday essentials at our filling stations. And always great offers too. Ellen Vannin Fuels.
At Pagod Cattery, we've been caring for animals for over 50 years. As a cattery, we care for our customers' cats and treat them as our own. Visit pagod.com or call 321 989.
Manx Mobility in Onchan have it all. Daily living aids, wide-fitting shoes, rice recliners, beds and scooters, including lightweight and airline-approved models. Call in and see how our expert team can make your life easier. Manx Mobility at the top of Summer Hill.
This is my last will and testament. To my family, I leave years of financial headaches, large legal bills, and the prospect of having to sell our home to pay for it all.
Is that the legacy you choose to leave? Without a proper will and thorough planning, it could happen. Mann Benham Advocates, experiencing wills, probate and estate planning with a friendly service to make sure the future of your loved ones are secure. Don't put it off. Call 639 350 for your free initial consultation with Mann Benham. Here for you.
Corkhill Storage, Corkhill Storage. Call Corkhill Removals and Storage today. We'll store your goods day after day. Safe and secure around the clock. When it comes to storage, we do the lot. Click CorkhillRemovals.com.
Are you a small charity here on the Isle of Man? Are you looking for volunteers, hoping to raise awareness and chasing those crucial pounds and pennies to support your work? Well, Manx Radio can help. You could be our next 1-3 Charity of the Week. With daily on-air coverage, podcast and social media promotion, we can help support you and those you help. Just email the numbers 123 at manxradio.com and listen out for the feature each weekday between 1 and 3pm. The Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. The news is that the Man in Line theme, by the way, is called The Winning Plan. And it's what we call a piece of commercial production music. It wasn't really intended to be sold. But Graham Prescott is the guy who wrote it and I think performs it as well. So he's made a few bob out of it over the years because it's used all around the world. He's a British composer and musician. And I think once upon a time was in Mott the Hoople. But there it is. He's provided our theme tune for well over 30 years. So that's that situation. The mountain road's shut and the coast road between Ramsey to Douglas is chaotic between 7:30 and 9. Could cyclists please try to travel outside? This is John in Ramsey, who wants cyclists not to travel on the coast road between 7:30 and 9, as the roads are at best minor routes, and it's making it incredibly tricky to navigate them with cyclists everywhere in a rush hour. From a safety point of view, not convenience, safety. The NSC roof is Michelle Haywood, MHK, has just emailed in to say the NSC roof is just being used as part of the government estate. The power won't go to the NSC or the DESC. It'll be fed into the grid. Helpfully, with the power station next door, it'll be relatively simple to connect to the grid in this location. Manx Utilities will take all of the power generated from the panels, says Michelle. Thank you, Michelle. But surely there's some money involved in that, isn't there? Because there is technically, if the utilities are buying electricity from anybody for 9p, does that obviously doesn't apply to government then. An accountant will probably tell you how to do that. A good place to put solar panels is the Motor Museum in Jerby. Yes, it's not owned by the government, though, is it? They need to put solar glass on the front of the building, which is south-facing, and in the pool areas, like a greenhouse in the summer. Sue in Balaf said, we're generating 3 kilowatts at the moment in Balaf, using 0.3 and sending 2.7 to the grid. We're looking at getting a battery. We thought the government was going to do new grants to include batteries, but apparently not at present. Thank you, Sue. If you're thinking of getting solar panels and a battery, I mean, without telling us your household finances, how much does it cost, I wonder? Stephen's with us now. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Andy. Hi, listeners. And I'd just like to support Tony Brown. I think that the this building should remain in public ownership. I know that's an arm's length organisation, Manx National Heritage, but I do feel that we're losing our way somewhat with Manx National Heritage, and they either their budget could be cut because they don't seem to be opening the facilities they've already got within Castletown. And I think that if you look, I was in Castletown a couple of weeks ago and I looked up at the castle and there were some of the leaded windows which were broken. So I can only conclude I would not like to think it's neglect. I would like to think it's a problem with the budget. And I do hope that our MHKs will reject the proposal for Manx National Heritage to sell this building and find the use for it. Buildings are far better when they're used, I do agree with that. But buildings of this type are not, they're not in great quantity around the island, and that where it is directly opposite the castle. If it's impossible for the current trustees and management of the Manx National Heritage to incorporated within the facility, that I'm afraid to say my view increasingly now is let's get rid of them. I'm getting fed up of all these various organisations on the island and arm's length groups and departments of government finding it easier to get rid of things rather than making them work. And I think it's about time that our elected representatives started, in my view, pushing this forward, that if you can't do it, well, we don't want you. We'll have to get rid of you if you can't come up with solutions. What do you think, Andy? Do you think that's a good start for the new administration?
Well, as you say, people? The thing is that we have to get our story straight. What is it that we want our old buildings to do? You know, what do we want? The thing is, we're blessed. We're blessed and cursed because we're cursed with the upkeep of a lot of these old buildings. We're blessed because we have old buildings, Stephen. So we're on the kind of horns of a dilemma here, aren't we?
I'll retort that, Andy. In 2013, I believe that the government departments started withdrawing grant aid for older property, and they in turn have given grant aid to luxury apartments. They've given this development on Douglas old bus station site will get grant aid, I think, to the tune of 16 million. And why on earth does a private developer need an investment of that magnitude to make the development worthwhile? And yet, if you're Mr. Kinvig down the road who has a property within a conservation zone, you can't get any help to do the roof and you can't get any help to do the rewiring.
Good point.
So it's our attitude to conservation in general, and it's amplified by the problems that Manx National Heritage have got. There is money available. They should spend it more wisely and give it to people who really need it, not luxury departments. But let's go back to heritage. Nobody is suggesting for one moment that every building should remain in Aspic and it should never be reused, because reuse is the long-term solution. But these are buildings vested in the safety net and the control of Manx National Heritage. And if this current management and current trustees can't find a way forward, do we need a review of Manx National Heritage? Is their budget sufficient? And we've got to really look at these issues. I accept we can't keep everything, but the things vested in these government departments, such as the Isle of Man Heritage Railways, heritage buses, which bus van and use, but when do you ever see them out being augmenting any service or taking people up to the Motor Museum or the Transport Museum in Derby, or just a run from Douglas to Peel? These things need to be used, and they've got to become more commercial in that zone. But I don't mean getting rid of assets. This particular asset opposite the castle is unique, and it should be kept for the use of the public and the use of our heritage.
Yeah.
After all, that's the only real offering we've got now. We don't have any private tourist facilities. We've only got heritage ones, and these are the areas that we've got to really put our funding into it if we're either in it or out of it. And they do make the island a more interesting place for people who reside here in any event.
As you say, Stephen, we've got to make our mind up. Are we in this business or not?
Well, I think we've got to be in it because it makes the place unique. It makes the place interesting to live here. And it follows on that there's got to be reasons why. Why is the castle got broken windows? Why is it that the Manx National Heritage Facility in Peel, for example, why do people complain that some of the tableaux are not working as well as they should? We've got to have investment back in these things. You know, it's often been said, not by me, that we build things and then we don't invest in maintenance of them. Heritage is no different.
I can speak on a personal level. We had some guests at Christmas who came over, and I took some of them to the house of Manannan. And frankly, Stephen, I was embarrassed because, as you say, you can press the buttons on the tableaus and sit there like a lemon for 30 seconds to realise nothing's ever going to happen. And really, for something like the House of Manannan, that can't be right.
Well, Andy, what on earth are the people who we are paying top dollar for to manage these things, what are they doing? Who is asking them, does this work? Why doesn't it work? What are you doing to make it work? We've got to stop this pussyfooting around with our public servants and these arms-length companies to make them work for the benefit of the island. And if they can't do it, well, I'm sorry. If you want to get a roofing company in to do your jobs, you expect them to come along and do it. Otherwise, you get rid of them.
Okay. All right. I appreciate your point of view, Stephen. Thanks for calling. It's 18 minutes before one. I just wonder what your thoughts are. And by the way, as always, this is not having a go at anybody at the House of Manannan. All fine people, all working hard. The trouble is, the House of Manannan was state-of-the-art 25 years ago. Times moved on. And those tableaus that are in the House of Manannan are, for a big part, dysfunctional. All the stories are there, but the trouble is, when everything has moved on, you know, they were created when the Nokia was the state of the art. We've moved on to smartphones now. So at some point, somebody's got to spend a lot of money on the House of Manannan to bring it up to really where it should be. And at the moment, we don't see what's happening. Obviously, Manx National Heritage are stuck for money. They've always been stuck for money. But they weren't stuck for money when they built it, because it was state of the... Remember, Anthony Quayle did it. We mentioned this yesterday about should parents who... couples who live together but aren't married or in a civil partnership be able to, for tax purposes, be jointly assessed? Laurie Hooper thinks they should. He's going to pitch this to Tynwald on the 21st of April. The current system treats people in long-term committed relationships unfairly. Well, we asked Chris Thomas, the Treasury Minister, for a response, and he said Tynwald will debate Mr Hooper's motion later this month and now reserve remarks until then. However, Mr Thomas said it's disappointing that a substantial change is proposed when there are so many other social, economic and public finance challenges around us. So we'll see what Mr. Thomas has to say. As I understand it, visitor taxes are for places where thousands of people come in. It has a direct impact on locals' lives, so extra toilets, rubbish bins, possibly car parks, extra staff to help locals live with their regular life. We hardly have the numbers for that, so quite what they'd use the tourist tax for, we don't know. Richard's on now. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Andy. I just thought I'd get back to you regarding the solar you're asking about.
Okay.
I can't give you any long-term records. I've just had solar installed on the top of my house. And we're just starting to generate, and it's working out to be very good. And I'm currently generating in this weather. It's not great weather. I'm currently generating about 3.5 kilowatts, and it's filling up the battery. And I know that David Quirk's off and on saying that he's generating energy and his battery is full. I don't know what he runs in his house, but he must have everything switched off, because obviously when you're running things, you obviously have to use electricity as well as save it. So how he's managing to have his battery full and generate, I'm not quite sure. But I just wanted to talk to you about the situation with the MUA that I find a little bit irritating. They've just decided to put all these panels on top of the NFC and feed back into the MUA system, as you've just said. But in reality, if you're a private individual and you've just gone to the expense of putting a lot of panels on the top of your house, they will only buy the electricity off you at 9p a unit, whereas they're charging 29p a unit for electricity. And they'll only give you 9p a unit back for it, even though they're just taking that electricity off you and selling it to the building next door or whatever for 29p, making 10p a unit on your electricity. But what's worse than that is that I've just been told by the MUA that they'll only let me export 2 kilowatts an hour. Because there's so many people, this is a conversation I had this morning with the MUA, because there's so many people now doing this, they're having to throttle back or restrict the amount of electricity they'll let people put back into the system.
Right.
So if I can generate 5 kilowatts an hour, I'm only allowed to export 2 kilowatts an hour. So that's really quite unfair. And I think if they're going to be fair about it, when they get all these panels on top of the NFC, what they need to do is only allow 2 kilowatts an hour to come off those panels to go into the MUA system. And they should only allow 9p a unit for rent of the top of them, because that would be fair, because that's how the public are being treated.
Nice try. Do you think it's going to work?
No, not at all. And it's not fair. And as far as going to the expense of putting panels on your roof, and yes, it does take a long time to pay it back, but I think you have to think about it in a completely different way. Say, for instance, and this isn't the price, but say, for instance, it's 10 grand to put panels on a battery on your house. The price of these things has come down tremendously now. Panels, 450-watt panels are, they're only 70, 80 quid a piece, and the batteries are on less than 2 grand each. So say, for instance, you're going to make an investment and you're going to put 10 grand's worth of solar on the top of your house. From if you put that 10 grand in the bank over a year, you get 400 quid on it, roughly. But each of your bills that comes in per quarter has got to be approaching that. I don't know what everybody's bills are like, but I'd imagine they're up in the 300s, 360s, depending on how big your house is. Certainly, my house is quite a bit bigger, and I put it on for that reason, is to try and bring down the electricity prices. So I see that as a saving. Each quarter, your electricity bill will be, a lot cheaper. And therefore, you're better off with the money on top of your house than you are in the bank making 400 quid on it, if you're lucky enough to get 4%. Do you understand my thinking?
So how long did it take you to make your mind up to have solar panels?
I was getting bullied by my neighbour, really, because he was sending me screenshots of his quarter electricity bill at £56 for a quarter for his electricity. And my bills were way, way above that by hundreds. And I wanted some of that. So I decided that I was going to take the plunge and put panels on my roof and a battery in. And currently we're producing about 3.5 kilowatts. And it's going into the battery to charge it up. The house is using less than a kilowatt.
Would you recommend it to other people, Richard?
Absolutely, without a doubt. And the thing is, in the UK, they're giving you a £7.5 grand grant to put solar panels on your roof. And I think this is the way the Manx government should go, is to invest in people and give them an instant saving on their electricity bills. If we were to give everybody on the island a grant towards, not a grant that you have to jump through hoops of fire, it's impossible to actually get the money out. It's like a theoretical grant that you can never get hold of. But give people $5,000, let them put solar panels on the roof, let them put batteries in their house, and let them, their first bill that comes through the letterbox, let that be £300 less than it usually is. And that's a real saving for people, and people are going to immediately feel that they're saving money and they've got more money in their pocket. And that's something the government could do that would really help people. And I think it's definitely something to do. I know that not everybody can afford it, but if it was a grant system, then certainly I think everybody should do it. And it might reduce our reliance on bringing power through the intergenerator.
Right. Did you
having wind farms up and all that kind of thing?
So tell me, did you make sense of what the MUA said about the fact that you can only give them 2 kilowatts? What was the reason for that?
Because there's more and more people getting on board the system, and it's overloading the system, and the system's not up to it. So if you're on early with panels last year or a couple of years ago or whatever, you could possibly get 5 kilowatts an hour exported, which obviously, it's only ninepence. It's not great, but it's better than 2 kilowatts at ninepence. It's about, apparently, the system and what the system can cope with. But I just think it's unfair, really. It's not very green. We're trying to be green here, aren't we? And that's certainly one of the reasons that I installed this system on my house and got an electric car, which I now fill up from the battery, which has come from the sun. And that all works. And I was a big skeptic. And actually, I'm completely converted now and almost obsessed with watching how much money's coming in from these, or how much sunlight is coming in from these panels and how much we're saving. And it's a really great thing. And I think that it should be a system that's rolled out through the island, and sponsored by some kind of green initiative for the government, rather than these other things that are almost impossible to access these other grants.
Richard,
systems.
We appreciate it. Thanks for cluing us in on that today. I think you've probably converted quite a few people.
Yeah, I definitely say go for it. It's a really good thing when you get it done.
All right. Thanks for calling today. Good to hear from you. Can you imagine losing a meter of your land every year through no fault of your own? That's exactly what's happening to Thomas Cleeter, who's been working the same farm near Jerby for over 20 years. Now, Thomas says the land there is eroding quicker than ever before after losing another couple of metres in the past few months. Thomas Cleeter.
You can see how green it is at the bottom still as well, because that's how much has been taken out, and it's not going to stop.
And you can see the fence here. I mean, there's a gap between the land here and the fence of, what's that, about 4 feet probably?
Yeah, this chunk, there was about 2 or 3 metres on the other side of it last time I was up here seeing it, and it's just wiped out in one hit. And I'm like, I'm not even going to try and recover that fence now. If you're scared of heights, it's not a place where you want to be. Like, I've been farming on this farm entirely for 4 years, but I've worked this farm with my father, coming up to around 20 odd years now.
Oh,
I think.
Wow.
My father put this fence up, and he put it up and he brought it back in about a good 20 odd metres from where it was. I don't think we thought it was going to lose like a metre a year kind of thing. It's definitely speeded up. Like, it was quite settled for quite a long time, and now it's like it's gone into overdrive, really. Like, it's going very quickly.
Is there any idea of what's caused it to speed up? Is it just the, we've had some fairly extreme weather over the past few years as well, in terms of storms and things like that? Is that what's making more of an impact?
I mean, I'm not 100% sure, but every time we have a storm, we lose a bit. So I'm putting two and two together in that sense, that the more savage storms we're having are just starting to take more chunks out of it, because there's more winds like that, more high waves coming further up the beach. And yeah, it's just taking it out. And because all of this is just sand, there's no actual bedrock or anything underneath it. So it's just really easy for it to take out and take down.
Thomas Cleeter. Now, the DOI is currently working on its response to that. In 2025, July 2025, it published a national strategy to tackle the issue of coastal erosion. In it, the publication said that the areas which have changed the most between 1869 and 1998 were between Glenmore and the Cronk, and the Cronk and Jerby Head. DOI also recommended carrying out more data collection around the Isle of Man while implementing a consistent long-term coastal monitoring programme. Well, everybody knows you can't really beat nature. you have to try very, very hard to beat nature. So I just wonder what you think can be done. The field, Texter 696 said, Andy, the field across from Balladool amenity sites, only 20 feet from the road to the edge of the field. The dog training group had to stop meeting there due to the field falling into the sea. Yet we never hear about this serious problem. The field may look longer until you view it from the sand. Only then can you see the soil underneath the edge of the field cut away by erosion, leaving a very serious problem. Quite what we do about it, well, I can tell you one thing that you'd have to do about it, and that is find some money. It always comes down to money, shouldn't it? So what do we do about that? Texter 541 said, what Stephen was saying should apply to whoever controls the Villa Arcade. It's empty, it's forlorn, it needs to be occupied, generating some revenue. Better something rather than nothing, surely. That's the Villa Marina Arcade. It doesn't make financial sense to invest in solar panels, which create 3 kilowatts and send 2.7 to max utilities in the daytime for 9p per kilowatt hour, only then to pay 29p per kilowatt hour later on, says G. Solar panels, yes, says John, but it takes 12 to 15 years to recuperate the cost. So, bluntly, it depends how old you are, I suppose. Manx National Heritage has been underfunded by the government for some time now, says James. I'm just prompted to recall one. I think it was Roger Watterson, actually, talking of Dear Roger. Roger Watterson was talking about the guy who was responsible for the House of Mananin. He was the boss of Manx National Heritage, and you remember Stephen Harrison. And I think it was Robert, and Stephen may contest this, but Roger Watterson once told me Stephen Harrison used to sit on the Treasury Minister's desk and not move until he got the money for Manx National Heritage. It's a strategy, I suppose. But you never know. From Manx Utilities, they tell us the micro-generation exports, there's been a policy change. Manx Utilities introduced a revised scheme which reduced the maximum export capacity for new applicants from 5 to 2 kilowatts. This was explained by the authority as due to grid stability and network management constraints, particularly on a small island system, by increasing the number of solar installations. So in summary, solar rollout is happening. Export limits have been reduced for new systems, but the claim that the policy is designed specifically to increase profit for Manx Utilities, well, it's not really supported by the publicly available evidence. But you make your own mind up. And also, bearing in mind what Richard was saying, if more and more people, are encouraged to get solar panels, and, well... And if the grid system at the moment needs stabilising, what's going to happen when everybody is generating lots more of this? You're listening to The Winning Plan by Graham Prescott, a.k.a. the Manx Radio Man in Line theme tune, the winning plan. By the way, Graham Prescott, I think, has got his own website. If you want it, it's Preskett. Graham Prescott. That's it. Tomorrow, Teresa Cope is on, Chief Executive Officer of Manx Care. You want to get in touch? You can try tomorrow, or email, or call the answer phone. That's it. Thanks to Chris on the phones today. WINT.